Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 314 of the podcast. And it is Saturday, the 25th of March, 2017, as I record this from sunny New Orleans. And yeah, I have a bit of a tickle in my throat, which I might explain in a little bit. So today I have an interview with Gerard Morris on tips and tricks for podcasting. And whether you want to start your own show or grow your existing show, or if you want to be a guest on a podcast, this will be really useful for you. And we talk about all those different things, including issues if you're an introvert and all those things. So I'm going to skip publishing news and futurist stuff and just get into my personal update, because I'm here in New Orleans, and it is great weather. It's really nice. It's warm and sunny, and even in the graveyards, it's beautiful. And it's been a pretty awesome week, to be fair. I flew into Chicago last weekend and had a day there. I had breakfast with Brian Cohen from the Selma Book Show, which was fun. And then I visited the Museum of Surgical Science in Chicago. And because I like anatomy stuff, if you read any of my like Desecration, the London Psychic books, they've all got a lot of anatomy in. So I like visiting surgical museums and anatomy museums. And I went along and I found this 4,000-year-old Peruvian skull, this with tree panning, where they drilled a hole in people's heads. And I found that quite cool. So I thought that might be the hook for the book that we have co-written this week. And so that was a great start to the day. And then I ended up walking along the lakeshore and then into Wicker Park, which has some great independent bookstores. Really enjoyed my day in Chicago. Then headed to the train station and met up with Jay Thorne, Lindsay Barocca, and Zach Bohannon. And we had two sleeper cars from, not sleeper cars, like sleeper compartments. I mean, they're barely a cupboard, from Chicago to New Orleans. And we started writing our dark fantasy story, which just happens to be set on a train from Chicago to New Orleans, the very train we're on. And we did indeed use the skull as an opening, as a story device. So it was very fun. So we got started, and because of my jet lag, I was up at 4 a.m. and not that we slept anyway, because the horn like literally honks all night. I mean, it's like honk, honk, honk all night. and also the temperature in the car, it was absolutely freezing. Seriously was. Anyway, I got up and started writing that morning about 4 o'clock and watched the dawn come up over Memphis, Tennessee, which was pretty cool. And and then we arrived in New Orleans, and we're staying on the edge of the French Quarter. And this week we've basically, our process has been to, with jet lag, I've been up early. So I've been getting up and going and writing my words pretty early, like before 9 a.m. And then we have a story meeting. And then I've been doing quite a lot of tourist stuff, graveyards and voodoo stuff and the Bayou and things like that. So it's been great. And then we would have another story meeting and like have dinner and being quite sociable for a group of introverts, which is quite fun. So we're all writing a different point of view character. There's a number of characters, but we've each taken one and stuck with their point of view. And it's been, what's been the most difficult is writing scenes with more than one of our characters in, because it's just been hard. I mean, we've done this in a week. We finished now. So I'm recording this on the Saturday. We started pretty much on the Monday. So it's been very fast. We have actually changed our process as well during the week. So earlier on in the week, you know, I find it impossible. We had agreed essentially that we would arrive and then, without any preconceptions, then start plotting the book on the train and then write it together. But I just found that impossible. You know, as I said, I found the skull, and I arrived with quite a lot of ideas with what to do with the story. And
And that got us through a few days. And then if you listen to the science fiction and fantasy marketing podcast this week, what day would that would have been on around the, I don't know, the 22nd or something of March. And that's a great podcast, by the way, at marketingsff.com. We recorded that together on Tuesday night. And what was interesting is up to that point, I was definitely kind of in charge. And that was hinted at in the podcast we recorded. And then that night, basically, we run out of story. So I went to bed and left the other guys plotting because, you know, I can't stay up late because of the jet lag thing. So I went to bed, and when the next day I got up, they'd finished plotting everything. So we've definitely had swings and roundabouts in terms of who did what, and, you know, but we've all written the same number of words. So that's pretty cool. I also recorded interviews with Lindsay, Jay and Zach, which will be airing on this show on the 17th of April, which will also be the day we publish the book. Because basically what we're doing is next week, we finished our first draft, next week we're editing, and then there'll be a proofreading, not copy editing, because there's four of us pro writers. So we've decided we don't need an editor, we just need a proofreader. And then we've got the cover, which is awesome. And we'll be publishing the book then. We're going to do an awesome competition as well with super prizes. So basically, if you buy the book that week, and it will only be available that week, the prizes will, you'll be able to get an absolute ton of extra stuff. So we're going to try and push the book out there. So yeah, I've also been doing quite a lot of tours. Yesterday, Lindsay and I went on an airboat in the bayou, which was so much fun. I mean, it was really fun. These airboats go super fast, and it was a small boat, and I got to hold a baby alligator, and we saw a lot of alligators. It was great, and I'm actually going back in on Sunday. I'm going on a kayak tour in the bayou, which will be a completely different perspective. So really, really slow as opposed to really fast. And I've got a scene at the end of the book in the bayou and of the dark fantasy novella. And then I'm also writing my own arcane novella off the back of this. So that will be probably one day in New Orleans. Because that's what I do for my one day novellas. And I'm going to do more in the US. Like, I've been thinking a lot about this, and I've very, very much enjoyed kind of coming into the city, working hard in the mornings, doing the touristy stuff in the afternoon, and like soaking up the vibe. And this has been a great trip. And, you know, considering I had the Israel trip and then Australia, New Zealand, both of which didn't quite work in terms of my writing process, I feel like this has been very successful. And I'm really happy that I've managed the balance between working and seeing things and experiencing the city. I've also really enjoyed hanging out with author friends. So obviously Lindsay, Jay and Zach, but also Laura and Dan Martone. Thanks to Laura and Dan for showing us around for a couple of days and getting us into the real House of the Rising Sun. I mean, how cool is that? The old brothel in town. So that was fantastic. And we've had dinners together, and it's been very sociable for a whole load of introverts. I think one experience summed up what I love about being an author. We all went to the Museum of Death together on Thursday, and, you know, it was pretty weird place, to be fair. I think it should be called the Museum of Serial Killers, because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't about graveyards and the death culture that I usually find interesting. It was pretty much serial killers. It was a really interesting museum, but it's not the type of place that you can go with. It's not like where you take your mom or friends who don't get what we do. And it what was really nice was to hang out with people who understand my kind of brain and who don't, you know, like Lindsay and I in the Bayou, and it's like, wow, you could really kill someone out here and no one would know about it. And people don't find that conversation weird when they're a writer, because we know that our brains do just weird stuff with what's going on around us, and things find their way into the books. I mean, the the Authors on a Train book, which is actually, I can tell you the title, it's called American Demon Hunters Sacrifice. So the book is Sacrifice, and the book is full of loads of little things that happened on the train. So, you know, you'll be like, why did they put that in? And it's because it happened. So, you know, things about these brownies that we ate and the condiments on the table and the sound of the horn, and even our conductor in our carriage, Patrick, has made it into the book. You know, so what's so lovely about hanging out with authors is that we just get it, and we don't find it strange when another person says something that normal people would find really weird. We did wonder at one point that we might be discovered on the train, because we were talking about things that in a terrorist scared society would probably not be things you want to talk about on a train, but it was very fun. So I will definitely keep coming to America for many of these conferences and things, because I met Lindsay at Smarter Artist and Laura and Dan at Smarter Artist. I hadn't, even though I've written a book with Jay, Risen Gods, we wrote together, I hadn't met Jay before, so that was cool. And also meeting Zach, I hadn't met Zach before. So it was great to hang out with other writers. And so I want to encourage you listening to go to in-person events and like force yourself out of your introvert corner and make some friends and then do stuff like this. I mean, it's been super fun. So I'll update some more on that next week, and the book will be out in a couple of weeks, and I will read you the rather awesome blurb maybe next week. Okay, so other useful stuff this week. Two things. Crime Spree. If you enjoy crime novels, I'm in an Insta freebie, and there are 12 crime novels, ebooks, obviously, from best-selling UK authors. So if you like British crime, check this out at Agent Hunter. So agenthunter.co.uk/crime-fiction. I'll put the link in the show notes, but basically agenthunter.co.uk/crime-fiction, and 12 best-selling UK authors with ebooks there that you can grab through Insta freebie, and obviously an email list building exercise. And just a reminder that Mark Dawson and I are doing a free webinar tomorrow, if you're listening to this on the day it comes out. If you're not, you might have missed it. But basically, on Tuesday, 28th of March at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK, we're doing a webinar. Well, Mark is doing a webinar. I'm just hanging out and answering questions. But it will be a demo on how to set up and use Amazon ads for your books. Super useful demo. And you will leave the 90-minute session with exactly how to do it yourself. You don't need to buy anything. You can just come on the webinar and learn how to set up your own ads. So you can find the details at thecreativepen.com/mark17. That's M-A-R-K-17 and or M-A-R-K-1-7, I should say. thecreativepen.com/M-A-R-K-1-7. So that is on Tuesday, 28th of March. If you haven't missed it. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. There's actually been a ton because I've been posting my pictures, including me with the baby alligator and, you know, in cemeteries and all kinds of pictures, actually. I've been posting on Twitter and Instagram and on my Facebook page. So, lots of pictures there. So lots of comments. So I'm not going to read any this week. But thank you for everyone who's commented or sent an email this week. So today's show is sponsored by Kobo Writing Life, and I'll play a word from them in a minute. And this corporate sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. Thanks to new patrons, Suzanne, Anton Van, Kitty Buchholz, Folkloristic, Lorna Faith, and Donna Hancock. Thanks to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. I really, really appreciate your support. And like the tweets and emails, it demonstrates you enjoy the show and want it to continue. You can support the show on Patreon with just a few dollars a month, less than a coffee a month, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio, which I will be getting onto as soon as we get into April. So you can support the show at patreon.com, patreon.com/thecreativepen. Okay, let's get on with the interview.
Hello, Creative Pen listeners. This is Mark Lefebvre, Director of Author Relations at Kobo. A lot of authors often ask me, what are our merchandisers looking for? What kind of books are featured on Kobo, and how can I get my books featured on Kobo? Well, this is information that can actually help, not just with Kobo, but with some of the other places that are more interested in doing human-based merchandising. So Kobo, Nook, and iBooks are probably more in line with doing this type of promo. And what they're really looking for is professionalism, looking for a fantastic cover that speaks to your target audience. Clean metadata is critical. Putting the right information in the right fields, like title, subtitle, particularly volume number, if you're writing books in a series, that helps us help get those in front of the right customers. And a decent price point, which means doing global pricing, ending your prices in most English language territories with a .99 price, or in European or in pounds at .49 or .99, and actually thinking about different pricing in different countries. For example, in India, you have to price bargain basement low to get any attention. In the UK, the publishers are very competitive, so you got to keep your prices low there. But in places like Canada or Australia, New Zealand, the tolerance for a slightly higher price is okay, and you can actually walk your price up just a little bit more without hurting your bottom line sales while still giving your readers a good value. You can find more tips like this at KoboWritingLife.com, where you can also click on and publish directly to Kobo through the Kobo Writing Life portal. But let's get back to your host, Joanna Penn, with the Creative Pen Podcast.
Today, I'm here with Jared Morris. Hi, Jared.
Hello, Joanna. How are you?
I'm great. It's so good to have you on the show. Just a little introduction. Jared is the Vice President of Marketing for Rainmaker Digital. He manages ongoing education at Digital Commerce Institute and hosts the Showrunner and the Digital Entrepreneur on the Rainmaker FM podcast network. And he also has a personal site, primility.com, which we're going to come back to. So Jared, you do so much, but we're going to focus in on podcasting today because we're both quite passionate about that, aren't we?
Yes. And of all the things I do, that's what I enjoy the most. So I can talk about it anytime.
That is awesome. So I want to start, and your show, The Showrunner, is all about podcasting. So people can go listen to like loads more stuff there. But first of all, why has podcasting become so prevalent now in terms of content marketing? What it's kind of been the last couple of years, hasn't it? It seems to have overtaken blogging, or has it? What are your thoughts?
I don't know that it has overtaken blogging. I think there are really three reasons why it's gotten big. You know, number one, you kind of had that watershed moment for podcasting when Serial happened. And Serial was the podcast that kind of brought it into the mainstream, not necessarily for podcast creators, but for listeners. Mm. And obviously, as we know, when the demand goes up, when the audience grows in a particular medium, content creators like us are going to flock there and try to reach people. And so, you know, Serial, and I'd been producing podcasts for a long time, but Serial, for example, was when my wife first listened to a podcast. And that was kind of when I knew, you know, because she's, you know, was never really into like consuming content online. But when she started listening to podcasts, I was like, okay, there's going to be a lot more people who are coming to do this. And so I think, you know, that was definitely one reason. Another reason is the ability to create podcasts got easier and got cheaper. You know, microphones got less expensive. And I think people realized, oh, this isn't really as difficult or as complicated as I thought. You know, for a while, I have a much more complicated microphone setup now. But for a while, I just had a Rode Podcaster mic that I plugged in via USB to my computer. And it wasn't, you know, it wasn't that complicated. It actually surprised me how simple it was to get good enough audio, right? It wasn't like, you know, the quality that you would hear from the local radio station, but it was good enough. And if your content is good enough and you have that minimum level of audio quality, you're going to be fine. And then the third reason is I think people like you and me who have been creating content for a long time recognized a different level of connection that you can get with a podcast. And this is why I think audiences flock to it. And again, this is why content creators have flocked to it, because the connection that you can get is so strong and it's so unique, because there is something different about my voice being in your head, you know, and my voice kind of accompanying you on these intimate moments when we listen to podcasts. Because a lot of times when we're listening to podcasts, it's in the shower, it's on a walk, we're doing dishes, or we're working out. We're doing activities that typically we're only doing ourselves. And now we're, you know, allowing, you know, whereas before it might be music or it might be silence. Either way, there's still kind of that intimate feeling that develops there. And so I think the ability to create that feeling and that connection was really valuable and really attractive to content creators like us. And so I think those three reasons really started the podcast wave. And now, you know, we've just seen it, you know, it seems like every month it gets a little bit bigger and there's more podcasts out there. But just be, you know, and just because there are more shows out there, that doesn't mean that the opportunity has passed you by if you've been thinking about starting a podcast. Not even close.
Yeah, we'll come back to that. But just so your wife, did she when she started listening to shows, did she listen on her phone?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Because that's the other thing, isn't it? When before smartphones, it was you would have to download it on your computer and then sync to your MP3 device and then plug it in. And I think the biggest shift, I think, for me personally, is having them on my phone. And it's much easier to try out shows, isn't it?
Yes. And I'm glad you pointed that out. I often forget that and take that for granted because I've been listening to them on my phone for so long. But yes, that made it so much easier for someone like her who hadn't done something like that. I mean, it was just like once she realized how to do it, it was just like punching up Spotify or Pandora and being able to listen. So that's a great point.
Yeah. And that's why I get so excited about the kind of global internet coming to more developing countries, because when they get smartphones, it's all just going to go boom. So yes. Talking about things kind of blowing up. So you mentioned very quickly there about how, you know, we're not even touching, you know, the growth side of things yet. So is it too late? Like many people feel it's too late to start a podcast. Like my show has been going since 2009. You know, people feel like, oh, maybe they've missed the curve. So are there too many podcasts?
Not at all. You know, look, would you have rather started in 2008 and started building your audience then? I mean, sure. You know, it's like anything else. I mean, of course you would have rather started before, but maybe you weren't ready, right? And maybe the audience wasn't there either. And so I think now is a perfectly good time to start. And one of the advantages that you have if you start now is you can really identify where the gaps are in the market and really figure out what niche you want to begin with. Because if you are going to start a show now, I would advise, you know, not just picking a general topic and trying to go out the door with that and thinking that, you know, the audience will just flock, right? You do have to be savvy about it. You have to be intentional about who you're targeting. And what you have now are a lot of markets with a lot of experience with shows out there, and you can kind of see which ones have succeeded, which ones haven't. And you can really identify, okay, my topic is X, right? And there are five other shows out there about X, three of which have been successful, two of which, you know, they don't even look like they're still going anymore. Mm. But where is the gap in there that I can kind of fit myself in? And so it kind of allows you to make even a better choice as far as that goes. And what's important about that is, you know, you've got to be different to attract that attention. But then as the audience grows, as you start getting more attention, you can, you know, expand what you're talking about a little bit. But I think that's, you know, it's like anything else. Sometimes those constraints can be blessings. And I think now there's a bit more of a constraint in how you want to go out and how narrow you want to be in terms of your topic, but that can actually really help you in the long run.
Yeah. And there's certainly a lot more help around now. I mean, when I started podcasting, it really wasn't even podcasting. It was kind of, it was very different, but also on that, the other thing I notice is gender and racial differences, because, you know, to be blunt, the vast majority of podcasters are white men, white American men. Would you agree with that?
I think so. I don't know the exact numbers on that, but just from kind of from anecdotal experience, yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah. And it's so funny because, and I was talking to Tara Gentile about this, about how, you know, there's so few female podcasters within the entrepreneurial niche particularly. And we were kind of talking about this. And then I was like, yeah, where are the other voices? So I'm excited about other people. Like there's one guy, Amar Vyas, he listens to the show. Hi, Amar. He has the My Kitab podcast, which is about the Indian book market and self-publishing. And I believe it's the first one, maybe the only one coming out of India in that niche. So that's the other thing for people, is to think much wider. Like you can still talk about the same topic, but you can talk about it with a different voice and a different perspective, and people will resonate with that in a different way.
Absolutely. And again, that's a great point. I mean, for someone who is thinking about starting a podcast and you kind of have your topic and you go there, it can be a little bit intimidating to see 10 shows about a topic. But that really, I mean, that's just the starting point. Now you've really got to look at, okay, what audiences are they targeting? You know, what can I authentically bring to this conversation and who can I relate with? And then really see. And I think for the most part, you'll find that niche, that a niche that you can get into. And you just, you know, described one perfectly.
Yeah, no, cool. Okay, so obviously we don't have time to go exactly into all the technical detail on how to podcast. And when I started, I just had a handheld recorder, which I held next to the phone, an actual phone on speaker, which is kind of ridiculous. And you said you started with a basic mic. But if people are starting now, you know, what is the sort of baseline that they could get started with?
You know, look, if you really just want to start and start recording something, you could record something with, you know, the little microphone or the little earphones that have the microphone kind of on the cord. Is that going to get you good audio? No. And you may record something, especially if it's a monologue type podcast, and say, okay, this doesn't really sound good enough for me to go out and deliver to the audience. And it may not, but in terms of practice, you know, just getting some practice recording, which I think would be advisable for anybody, especially if you haven't recorded before, something like that is fine. I think if you decide that you're going to be serious about it, you can get, you know, a Plantronics headset microphone on Amazon for $20 to $25. And I think if your content is good and if you have really kind of niched down and you're really speaking to a particular audience and bringing value, you can get by with that, right? Mm-hmm. Going out with a few episodes to get by, kind of your minimum viable podcast. I think when you get to a serious level, you know, and you're really going to start to kind of market this thing and promote it, I would think that you would want, at a minimum, you know, you could get a, well, there's a couple of different kinds and we don't need to go into all the details of them, but you can get a decent mic for $50 to $75, right? The Blue Yeti is an example of that. And that will give you definitely good enough audio to get moving. Now, once you get really serious, you know, I have a PR40 mic that costs like $350. And I kind of viewed that as I earned this, right? By doing, you know, 4 or 5 shows for 4 or 5 years. And some of those shows were making money. And so I could reinvest that money. But I'm glad I didn't do that right from the start. And I see some people make this mistake where they want to get all the equipment, you know, and spend a lot of time on that. Don't spend time on that. You know, kind of bootstrap it like you were talking about, you know, where you've got your recorder and you're holding it up to a phone. Like, there is actually something about that experience that makes you, I think, appreciate the what you're doing even more, you know. And it's almost, it's that kind of bootstrap quality at the beginning. And so don't get so caught up in spending all the money. Get that minimum level, get some experience, make sure that it's something you really want to do. Because the other thing about podcasting is you may get behind the mic and record 5-10 episodes and realize, I don't feel comfortable doing this. I don't like it. I would rather blog. I would rather write. And there is nothing wrong with that at all. To me, the only thing that would be wrong is thinking about doing a podcast and letting that fear, that apprehension prevent you from getting behind the mic in the first place. But when you do, you may not feel comfortable doing it. And that's totally okay. So don't invest all the money before you kind of find that out. Overestimate what they need in the beginning.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And it's interesting there. So you mentioned practice and you also mentioned the kind of fear. I still, now you and I have met in person, so I wasn't too afraid of this call, but I still get heart palpitations before I call someone for an interview. Like, I spoke to Stephen Pressfield this week, who's one of my I like worship the guy. and I'm so nervous and I'm worried about the tech failing. I'm worried about like cocking up and just generally being terrible. And so I still have fear even all these years later. So I wonder, I mean, you've done so many. So what are the things that you have learned? Like, what are the biggest lessons around, you know, interviews and tackling that fear?
Well, the fear still comes. I actually appreciate the fear because that kind of lets me know that I'm getting outside of my comfort zone a little bit. And if I had the chance to interview Stephen Pressfield, I would be terrified too. And that would be good because that's, you know, obviously that would be kind of a step up for me in terms of who I'm interviewing. And so I always want to feel that fear. Otherwise, I'm probably getting too comfortable and just producing the same content over and over again. And I think the other thing that helps me deal with the fear is the knowledge that it's going to be okay. Like, I've had everything possible go wrong. Like, I was interviewing Sally Hogshead once for the Copy Blogger podcast and realized about 25 minutes into it that I hadn't been recording the entire thing. And it, you know, and I felt so bad, and I had to just stop in the middle and say, you know, Sally, I'm sorry, but I haven't even been recording this, which, and she's a busy person, you know? So I thought, well, there, I just blew my chance to get this interview. And she ended up being really nice about it. And we, you know, recorded it later, and that, you know, so that would have been terrible. And obviously then I used that to kind of learn and have a little checklist of things to make sure that I do before I record. And I was just doing an episode of the Assembly Call actually two nights ago, which is my post-game show for IU basketball games. This is our sixth season. We've done, I don't know, 200, 300 episodes of it. It's broadcast live, like on the radio and at sports bars in Bloomington. So there's a real live element to it. Mm. And right in the middle of the show, the cord for my microphone fell out. It just fell out. And I'm like, oh man, you know? And so, but just, you know, because I've had those things happen, just didn't panic, put it back in, you know, and was able to deal with it somewhat calmly, you know, because again, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? So I think sometimes we feel that fear and we think, oh, we must be doing something wrong because the fear is here. But I think the fear is that's the direction that we need to walk in. And then I think just doing it and going through everything that can go good and bad has really just kind of reps, you know, it's like an athlete. You get more reps, you start to feel better, you start to feel more confident, you can, you know, adjust to whatever presents itself. And so I think podcasting is like anything else. There's nothing that can replace just getting out and doing it. And you're probably going to stink at first. That's okay. You know, almost, I've never talked to a podcaster who hasn't been mortified listening to their early episodes.
Oh, yeah.
That's just, I mean, and it's probably the same thing with a blogger or writer when you read, you know, your earliest drafts, your earliest stories. But that's okay. You know, we all have to start somewhere. And so, you know, just embrace that and embrace that experience. And that's what will really help overcome the fear, is just stacking up episode after episode.
Yeah, the same applies to writing books, of course.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
So actually, the other thing I wanted to ask you about, one of the things I try and do is do my interviews earlier in the day for me, which is normally afternoon because it's the American morning, my afternoon, because if I get too tired, I can't bring energy into my voice. So is that something that you have to do? It's like you have to bring it. It's a kind of performance and you have to smile because people can hear it in your voice. Like, have you learned how to do that better?
Absolutely. I mean, there are definite, you know, techniques to being behind the mic that you will learn. And one of the hardest things, I don't know if you experienced this, but I hate listening to myself. I can't stand it. Like listening back to old podcasts, just listening to my own voice, there's something very difficult about it. And I found that a lot of people feel this way. And I have finally now, after however many episodes it's been, gotten more comfortable doing that. And it really helps, you know, to kind of identify, like, hear how I just said, you know, right there.
Oh, this I is do something too.
Yeah, this is something that I've really been working on. And I find that if I don't listen to my own shows on a somewhat regular basis, I fall back into that old habit, you know, that verbal crutch. I just did it again right there. And so that really helps. And I think what you say about it being a performance, absolutely. And so what's interesting about that is, for me, I try and actually schedule my interviews in the afternoon because I tend to have a more natural, just be kind of louder and more active as it is. And so I actually like doing that in the afternoon because I know that no matter what, I'll get like that if it's an interview. And so I would rather save, you know, kind of my focus time to work in the morning. And so you kind of figure out how you are naturally and what works best for you. But yes, always be mindful of that reality. And this is why listening back helps too. It all people have is your voice. Mm-hmm. And there have been several studies that have shown that the audience can actually hear subtle changes in your voice to tell if you're scared, to tell if you're afraid, to tell if you're excited, to tell if you're enthusiastic. You really can't hide as much in your voice as you think maybe you can. And so the more that, again, that you can practice and be natural and schedule your interviews like you do to fit the right time of day for you is extremely important, because when it's just your voice, there's nowhere to hide when that voice is inside the audience member's head, and they will follow your lead. If you seem bored by an interview, they will be bored by the interview almost certainly, no matter how exciting your audience member is. They will follow your cue. So it's always important to be mindful of that.
Yeah, which is great. And we're both smiling and happy on our
That's
show.
Right.
But a good question then from the other perspective, because you and I are pro podcasters. So when someone else invites us on the show, we know how to do the back and forth. And of course, the Skype makes it easier because we can see body language too, which really helps. And sometimes when people do audio only, it's really hard. But I've had people on who literally cannot do an interview well. And I'm sure you've had that too. But for the listeners who are authors who may want to be on podcasts, what are your tips for being on a podcast, for being the interviewee? How can you make it easier for the podcaster who's interviewing you?
Boy, that's a great question. I think to a certain extent, the podcaster needs to help bring that out. And as you interview people, you will get better at this. And if you're doing a podcast, there are a couple things actually that I would say to help the person that you're interviewing. Number one, and you did this, is sending along some questions or letting the person know what to expect. Because I think just being able to prepare, being able to think through what your answers might be, that will help you so that you don't get that deer in the headlights look when you get a question and now it kind of throws you off. You can kind of be prepared for that and be a little bit more relaxed. The other thing, when you're conducting interviews, it can be helpful if you have never interacted with this person before to try and schedule a little quote unquote green room time before you're going to record, 5 or 10 minutes, and let them know, hey, let's hop on maybe 5 or 10 minutes early. We can go over the questions, however you want to frame it. You can kind of get a sense for how that person answers. Mm. There are some people that you can schedule a 30-minute interview and only ask 3 questions, and they just take it and they go. And a lot of times it's good stuff and you just want to stand back and get out of the way. Other times you'll ask a question and you might just get a 1-word response, or you get 1 sentence and you're kind of waiting for a story, and then it kind of abruptly stops and it almost takes you for granted. And so having an understanding or being somewhat prepared for how that person is can really help you know how to manage the interview. Because if it's going to be someone who kind of stops very abruptly, you may need to add more color and more context to the interview and to how you're asking questions. And it can really catch you off guard if it's your first time talking with someone and that just happens in the interview and you're caught. I've done that before, and I'm not ready to ask the next question yet, and so you're kind of going on. So I think, and so on the point of the person being interviewed, if the podcaster who's interviewing has sent you along questions, take 5-10 minutes and just, look at them and see, okay, these are all questions that I can answer pretty well. I've talked about this stuff before, but maybe there's not. Maybe there's a couple questions that dive a little bit deeper. And so you want to actually, write out a quick answer just so you've gone through the thought process before you're live there on the interview. That can really help. And, and some of the other things, frankly, are to, if you're being interviewed, to really think about the audience, respect the audience, respect the show. So try and be in a quiet environment, because these are things, if you don't do podcasts, right? Like, I think about these things all the time because I'm always hosting shows. But if you don't, you may not think about being in a quiet room, trying to be in a room that isn't, really, really echoey, having some water right there in case you need to cough, knowing where the mute button is on Skype so you can hit it if you're going to cough or sneeze, something like that. So those little things can really, really help. And that really goes on both sides.
Yeah. And actually on that, because I want to add, I think one of the other things as the interviewee is to spend a couple of minutes actually looking at the person who's going to interview you, actually look at their website and see what they're about. And because then you can respect their audience more. Like, are their audience small business people, or are they fiction authors, or, who are they? So I think that's really important too. But I want to come back to the technical side of podcasting. Discoverability with podcasts, right? Because, we have a big problem with discoverability with books. We have it with blogging, although with blogging, we've got like SEO. With podcasts, we don't have SEO right now, because search engine optimization for people listening, because it's voice. So how can you be discovered as a podcaster? How do you get your stuff out there?
Well, I wouldn't totally discount search engine optimization, because you do have an episode page. And so if you have topics that will be searched, and people search everything, so presumably you will, you want to use your show notes page to focus the text content that is on there around the specific keywords of that episode. You know, so for instance, this episode right here, you know, you would want to have maybe somewhere in the title, you know, tips on podcasting or tips on podcasting for writers, something like that in the headline. Because that's what people might search about to find the show. And if they find the show and then you've got a kind of a relatively detailed explanation of what we talk about, people might listen. And if you really want to go into it and you're focusing on SEO, adding transcripts to your podcast can really help. Now, those can be a little bit expensive and or time consuming. So that's a decision that you kind of have to make. But there are some ways to leverage search engine optimization for podcasts. The other thing to think about is iTunes discoverability or just podcast directory discoverability. And so it's really important to think both in what you name your show and the metadata both of your show and of the episodes to be strategic about that. You know, who are you really targeting? So to give you an example, I mentioned the show The Assembly Call that I do. This is a show for fans of the Indiana University basketball team. Well, the name The Assembly Call is kind of a clever play on the arena that Indiana plays in. But no one is really, I mean, now that we've grown 6 years in, some people are searching for The Assembly Call because they knew who we were. But in the beginning, no one knew who we were. We wanted to attract people searching for Indiana basketball podcasts. And so for the name in iTunes and anywhere that, you know, in the metadata for in the feed for the name of the show, it was The Assembly Call dash Indiana University Basketball Podcast and Postgame Show, because that's what people were going to be searching on. Same thing in the description, is you want to use those keywords in the description. And so just, you know, kind of thinking through those things, there are some small, simple things that you can set up that will help the show be discovered more. And when you do that, you really put yourself in a position that when people are searching, you pop up, and then you want to have some nice looking show art so that it kind of attracts the eye. And then when people listen, obviously, then you got to have a good product for people to listen to. But that will help you at least get yourself in front of the type of people that you want to be attracted to your show.
And I noticed a big shift in a big bump in traffic and a big bump in just happiness of listeners when I moved to a weekly show rather than a sporadic twice a month. And also I changed my show art to have my face, my smiling face on. Do you find that having it at the same time every week is super important if you want your show to you know, gain traction?
Absolutely. I think that goes to the next level. And on our podcast, The Showrunner, and in our course, we really stress to people, don't think of your podcast as a podcast. Like, podcasts are on-demand MP3 files that people can listen to. You're producing a show. And what happens with a show? You know, think of, you know, the term showrunner comes from television. How does TV work? There's a set time when people are going to be able to watch your show, and they can come and they can watch it. Now, they can record it and they can watch it on demand if they want to, but there's a next level of seriousness that your audience will take your show and that you will take it if you have a set time. So The Assembly Call is an example. We go live. Our live broadcast goes live as soon as the game ends. There is not a game that we are not there. I have a guest host. If I can't be there, or if for some reason we can't do a show, which hasn't happened in 3 years, we will email out people and let them know ahead of time. Because the last thing we want, and that you want as a showrunner, is someone going to look for your show and they don't find it there. Because if that happens once, you know, there's a small little erosion of trust that happens and a small little bit of disappointment that you've now brought your audience, and you don't want to do that. You want to delight your audience. And so if it happens over and over again, now people kind of start to lose that trust a little bit. And the power of a podcast, the power of a show, is not in someone just listening once to you. It's in someone listening over time and building an actual relationship with you. And just like in real life, a relationship is built over time with trust when people have an expectation and you meet or exceed the expectation. And when that happens over and over and over again, a real kind of trust, a real relationship develops, and you want to develop that with your audience. And so can you see some success from a podcast being sporadic? Yes. So if that's all you can do, that's fine. Still do it. That's not a reason to not do a podcast. But if you want to be serious about it and really maximize the potential of the medium, then I think treating it like a show and showing up at the same time every week is absolutely a great thing to do and a necessary thing to do to get the most out of it.
Yeah, it's fantastic. And one of the things that happened when I did go to a weekly show and got more traffic and more listeners was that my sponsorship money went up, and also Patreon. So I started Patreon. And one of the things about podcasting nowadays is all about monetization. So of course, I way back in 2009, it was more about marketing. It was more about, you know, monetization wasn't even discussed around audio in that way. So should people obsess about monetization if they are a new podcaster, and, you know, when should they think about it, and what are the different streams?
Yeah, I wouldn't obsess about it in the beginning, but you definitely need to think about it. And, you know, we kind of say on the showrunner, we say that there are four elements of a remarkable show, right? You've got to be authentic, you've got to be useful, you've got to be sustainable, and you've got to be profitable. So the thing is, if you're not profitable, if you never think about how this podcast is helping you generate revenue, then eventually you won't be able to keep doing it, because you won't be able to justify the investment of the time, unless your time just isn't that valuable. But I haven't run into anybody for whom that is true. Now, that doesn't mean that you need to be obsessing about sponsorships, or that's the only way, or you have to be able to draw a direct line from that podcast episode to X revenue, because there are really three different elements of monetization. So you've got direct, you've got indirect, and you've got intrinsic. So direct monetization from a podcast is like you talked about with sponsorships. So, you know, someone pays you X amount to be on the mid-roll of this episode, you read the ad, and they're paying you money. Okay, that's probably the most common, the most obvious way. But I think the best way to monetize a podcast is to think about the indirect monetization that comes from it. And that's really using podcasts as part of your content marketing arsenal. Okay. So, you know, having a show, and maybe you don't have sponsors, but you have an online course. And so you think about where your show fits into the funnel for your online course. And it is attraction. This is how I build the relationship. Now let me get people onto my email list or into my free membership community. And then, you know, I can use my autoresponder or whatever my other sequence is, or my other formula is, for then getting people to pay for my course, something like that. And so I think, especially if you can do a combination of those, and sometimes you can, now you're really going to get a lot out of your podcast. And then from an intrinsic standpoint, I do think there has to be something about the experience of hosting the show that you get value from. And so even if you're not making money from it, especially in the beginning, maybe it's the research value of preparing for the podcast that you get something out of. Maybe it's the connections, the networking connections you met. Like, you have a podcast, you just got to talk to Stephen Pressfield for 30, 45 minutes. You know, now that doesn't mean that you're best friends, but it does mean that if you, you know, have a question for him or something to send him in an email, it's now not just a random email. If you see him at a conference, you can, you know, go talk to him. You build your network this way. And so there's that intrinsic value of, okay, I put in this half hour to do this podcast, but I actually got something out of it. Even if I never make a dime off of it, I got something out of it. And that's where, you know, choosing your topic and choosing your format so that your preparation for the show gives you something above and beyond just the time that you put into it. That's really important. So those are kind of the three different levels. And, you know, intrinsic isn't necessarily monetization, but it's something important to think about, because there are benefits beyond the money, but you do at some point have to think about the money, most likely, or you won't keep going. And if you don't keep going, now you don't have a sustainable show for your audience. And if you don't do that, they're not getting the usefulness out of it, and they're not responding to your authenticity. So they all kind of build on each other.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I like to talk about monetization, but equally, I think it was 4 or 5 years before I made any direct money with the show. So yeah. I mean, and I love doing this for the connection. And as introvert, you know, you don't get to see people or talk to people much. It's like my social life.
Well, you know, and the other thing that's interesting too is I think it's been very hard for smaller shows to monetize their show directly. Like, advertising opportunities for podcasts have been there for the bigger shows, but it's been a little bit harder for smaller shows. You know, Midroll was kind of the big one, you know, that offered monetization opportunities with companies like MailChimp and some of those that that you often hear on podcasts, but you have to have 10, 20,000 downloads an episode just to get in there. So it's been very hard. You've had to go out and kind of quote unquote pound the pavement and find your advertisers yourself. And we've done that on the Assembly Call. You know, we have SeatGeek who advertises. Just on Twitter, I reached out to a guy who has a t-shirt shop that I thought would be a nice fit. And after some emails, we, you know, came to an agreement on a sponsorship package. So I would say, you know, number one, opportunities for companies like Midroll that will help medium-sized and smaller podcasters. We'll start to see those more and more as the audiences grow and the ability to track, you know, downloads and audience size as that grows. But also so many more small businesses now are aware of podcasts and aware of the potential benefits that if you see, you know, a product that you use and you think, you know, my audience could really use that, reach out to that person because they may just be dying for a chance to advertise on podcasts, but not be big enough to get into a place like Midroll, not know where to go to get podcasters. And you can strike up a really good one-on-one relationship with them and have a good sponsorship that works for you and your audience. So those opportunities are growing now. And again, that is one of the reasons that makes now a good time to launch a podcast, even if it feels like the opportunity is not quite there. Well, there are more opportunities now for monetization for new people than there were 6, 7 years ago when we started. So that's a nice benefit.
Yeah, absolutely. And I kind of want to fast forward now because I was listening to you with Brian Clark on The Digital Entrepreneur, which is a podcast I recommend to everybody. Your Indiana one, not so much that everyone listening will like, but I know The Digital Entrepreneur.
That is a very niche market, but it shows you niche markets can work. You know?
It really is. But yeah, so I was listening to The Digital Entrepreneur and you were talking about virtual reality, which listeners will know I get a little obsessed about. So do you see, and it was a great show and I recommended it everywhere. So I'm excited about it because I think like you and I could be doing this conversation in a VR environment and actually have people there. Like, do you see podcasting and video and, you know, events like digital commerce going into VR and when?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, when is a great question. I don't know. But I would say it'll probably happen sooner than we think, because it seems like all of that stuff is happening sooner than we think. And so, yes, I mean, I definitely think so. You know, if you saw the demo that Mark Zuckerberg did, you know, they kind of did their demo where he was up giving a presentation and showed, you know, basically got into this virtual environment with people who weren't there. And I mean, it was like being in the same room. And so, you know, you and I have talked about right now, we're looking at each other via Skype, how much that helps. Imagine if we were virtually in the same room. You know, now we could even see each other's body language a little bit more and it would be even better. And then I think, yes, the opportunity for people to actually watch that and it be like when we were at Digital Commerce Summit and everybody's out there in the audience, but for that to be done virtually, I think we will see that as the future of online education. I think we will see, you know, virtual performances like that. I absolutely do. And I don't know when, I don't know how expensive it'll be. And I'm sure it'll be difficult in the beginning. But I think that's the inevitable future.
Yeah. And do you think also, I mean, I'm looking at the Amazon Echo. I'm not allowed to say her name because some people listen on the device now and have said you mustn't say her name because you activate it. So do you think like that is going to make podcasting even bigger? Do you think that speech recognition is going to aid discoverability? You know, some of these other more, I guess, things that are going to happen sooner than VR.
I think so. I definitely think so, especially those in-home devices. I'm weird about those. I haven't gotten one yet. Like my parents got one of those before me. There's something to me weird about knowing that thing is always listening because it has, once I recognize that it's always listening because it has to hear what I say.
You get over it.
Yeah. And maybe I will. I probably do need to get over it, but yes, I think so because that is delivering answers via audio. And so I think it's just training us to be used to kind of having that disembodied audio there around us all the time. And not just music, but actually voices speaking to us. And so when we can just say, you know, hey, dial up the next episode of play the next episode of The Digital Entrepreneur, and it knows that and it can play it. You know, if I can do that while I'm washing the dishes, that'll help out a ton. So I think that, and the other thing that will really help with podcasting is the automobile. So that's kind of the next, you know, the next frontier is, how do we get in the majority of cars the ability to punch up a podcast episode as quickly as punching up the AM radio station? And I think that will start to happen as we get more interactive consoles in cars. And, you know, AM, FM radio is just right there with iHeartRadio and, you know, how you, all the different ways that you listen to podcasts. And then, you know, as we have more driverless cars as well, which is definitely the future, you know, the ability to sit there and do work or, you know, just listen to a podcast, you know, while you go, all of those things are going to help. I think podcast adoption get up, you know, for, I know last year it was in the mid 30s for people who had listened to a podcast in the previous month. I haven't seen the new numbers, but I have to assume that it's just going to keep growing and that that will continue future.
It does make me think, because of course the in-home devices at the moment are Amazon and Google are the main ones, and the Amazon Echo AI thing is now at CES, is going to be in all these devices. But of course, podcasting is bigger on iTunes and Stitcher, for example. But to get into those devices, you can be on Spotify. So do you recommend that all podcasters try and get their content onto Spotify, because that will go through those other devices?
Yeah, I think that's a good recommendation. I'm actually glad you mentioned that, because when they first announced podcasts, they were very selective in who they were adding. And I haven't gotten my shows into Spotify yet. I need to go back and look at that. But I do think getting it as many places as you can is going to be helpful. You know, like I just got a notification that one of my shows is going to be in iHeartRadio now, which is nice. And, you know, so there are, you make your show available just by having an RSS feed that is easy and getting it into iTunes, because a lot of these other ones will scrape from iTunes. And so that's certainly the most important one, and then Stitcher. But yeah, you know, getting it into as many different directories as you can is good. And that just requires, you know, going, and I would look on both an iPhone and an Android, you know, find out where people are looking. Google Play is another great place that people want to be, and just make sure that your shows can be found there. And if they're not, go submit it, because it typically only takes a couple of minutes to submit. And then you're in, and you'll always, you know, you're certainly not going to see your downloads go down, and you almost always see a nice little bump from those people who were there listening in using those platforms.
Well, we could talk all day about this, but we are out of time. So where can people find you and everything you do online?
Well, if anybody wants to connect with me on Twitter, my Twitter handle is at Jared Morris, J-E-R-O-D Morris. And any questions that you have about podcasting, I love to answer them. And then we also, at the Showrunner, if you go to showrunner.fm/report and enter your email address, we have a free report, The Beginner's Guide to Launching a Remarkable Podcast, which walks you through, you know, how to choose a topic, how to figure out your audience of one. We talk about monetization stuff. So it's a lot of the stuff that's in our course kind of condensed and gives you the general overview. But for someone who's just starting out, it's a great guide for, here are the kinds of things I need to be thinking about to make sure, you know, I put a good foot forward when I get started. So again, that's showrunner.fm/report. And we'd love to have people get on there and check that out.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Jared. That was great.
Thank you, Joanna.
I hope you enjoyed the interview with Jared Morris, and hope you wrote down lots of tips about podcasting, which I know lots of people are interested in. And I definitely think there's a lot of room for more diverse voices in the space. I mean, you don't have to have a podcast on writing. You can have one around your fictional interests or your nonfiction niche or whatever you like. It's fantastically open right now. I actually keep thinking about starting another podcast for my fiction side of things. And then I'm like, no, stop it. Just write more books. Anyway, lots of fun. Next week, I have an interview with Brian Cohen on the importance of time for selling books and building an author career. And it's interesting because, of course, I just met Brian for breakfast and we recorded this interview a few weeks ago. And Brian has a new baby. And we reflect on how to prioritize things when life becomes very busy. Also, how to negotiate family commitments with your writing, because people often assume that just because you're at home, you can do the childcare, or you can do all the washing and the cleaning and, you know, all the things that you need to get done in life. Often people don't make space for writing or the work we need to do as entrepreneurs. So, And many family members and friends might not understand what we do. We also talk about building a funnel, about copywriting for ads and networking with other authors. So that is a fun interview coming up next week. And remember, last call for the free webinar with Mark Dawson on creating your own Amazon ads, which will be on Tuesday, 28th of March at 3 p.m. US Eastern, 8 p.m. UK. And you can get the replay if you sign up at thecreativepen.com/Mark17, M-A-R-K-1-7. Right. See you next week.
Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.